back to another episode of the Kitmen Podcast. My name is Rohan. Before we get into the episode, be sure to drop 5 stars if you enjoy our content today. All right, yeah, that was nice and fast. Fast start, unlike City got off to today. But yeah, no, we have a great episode for you guys. We're going to be going through the games from the Big Six, basically. And joining me, Gareth, Eric, Dillette, and James. How are we today?
Feeling amazing.
Great, especially after what I just witnessed.
All right, well, let's kick it off, I guess, with the more shocking defeat to this weekend, Arsenal versus Everton. Eric, why don't you take it away? You're repping the hoodie.
I am, and I've got this very nice kit. Fortunately, it's
cold. That's nice.
It's too cold to wear without a hoodie. Yeah, that seems to be our annual horror show up at Goodison Park. We lose there every year, and Sean Dyche just had them rocking. The atmosphere there was so bad a couple of weeks ago. If you look at when they lost to Brighton, they were all booing the players off. Most of the fans were leaving with like 20 minutes to go. But Goodison Park was rocking, completely behind the team, and our players just couldn't handle it.
Yeah. No, interestingly enough, I think the last time a manager of Everton lost their first game, I think you'd have to go back to 1960, is what I heard.
Wow.
Yeah. Dillette, what are your thoughts as our other Arsenal fan? Oh, well, I guess we have Gareth, too. Damn, a lot of Arsenal fans today.
We've got plenty. Taking over.
Plenty to go around. I wasn't too mad about the result. I mean, obviously, I would have preferred to win, but, like, it was kind of the wake-up call that we needed because we didn't, like, deserve to win that game at all. You know, if we deserved to win that game, you can at least say, you know, one-off game, we'll bounce back. But I feel like instead, I hope we take it as a wake-up call before, you know, the really rough fixtures that are coming up, which I think we needed because, you know, life as an Arsenal fan has been a bit too perfect lately. I think that was a good reminder that, you know, we're still human. We're still just any other Premier League.
Okay, fair enough. Gareth, yeah. How about you?
Yeah, no, that's a good way to look at it from Dillette there. I was obviously very frustrated after the game, but going into the game, it's probably the least confident I've been in a long time, to be honest. Because of what Eric said, going to that Goodison Park is so horrible. And then Sean Dyche being there, Dominic Calvert-Lewin only recently coming back, it just felt like the perfect storm to lose a game. And then on top of that, it is just our kind of bogey team of the last few years as well. So, yeah, it was obviously gutting and stuff, but I was kind of expecting it. I managed to process my emotions a little bit easier than certain other Arsenal fans online.
That's fair. James, how about you?
Yeah, so I felt like there were kind of like two keys to this game. And one of them was Calvert-Lewin versus Arsenal centre-backs. Like, I mean, it's Dyche, it's long ball, it's a stereotype.
Saliba, Gabriel was fine.
It's a stereotype. Gabriel was fine. Kind of for a reason, you know what I mean? I saw a stat, Calvert-Lewin won 6 aerial duels, the most of any player. Shockingly, Saliba was second with 4. The other thing I noticed was how often the game was stretched out wide. The wingers had so much joy, especially for Everton. But in the first half, Saka, he was having the ball all the time. Dwight McNeil attempted 11 crosses that game, most of any by a country mile. I mean, the goal itself is nothing special, but it was Everton utilising a major strength of theirs, which is their ability in the air. Tarkowski versus Odegaard from a corner, there's only one winner.
That's a crazy matchup. Yeah. I don't know what... Was there like a switch on the corner that happened? Like they ran him into a screen or something?
Cause I'll tell you.
I didn't notice that.
The plan is that you get the squad players to slow him down. And Odegaard did not slow him down at all. But that was the plan. Yeah, small
Odegaard
players.
Odegaard was attacking dummy.
Yeah, it was bad.
Yeah, I think I want to shout out Onana from Everton. Because that kid can ball. He has been balling all season. I loved him yesterday too. He was huge. Yeah. He was huge.
He's gonna thrive under Sean Dyche, who's gonna absolutely love him. Like, I think people are really gonna start to realize just how good Sean Dyche actually is. With Burnley, I think obviously he finished 7th one year. He did a good job for them, and people kind of like gave him his flowers, but it was all like, oh, you know, it's just sit back, hoofball football. It's, you know, and it's not. The press that he put on Arsenal yesterday was unbelievable, and so I've seen some people online saying, like, you know, they just sat back and counted, and it's like people who watch that game and that's their analysis of it just don't They're not, number one, they don't know what they're talking about, first of all, but they're just not giving him the credit he deserves, and he has deserved for a long time. But I think with players like Onana, they're going to be able to perform the way that Dyche really wants to more often, and not only is Onana going to start, people are going to start realizing just how good he is, people are going to realize just how good Sean Dyche is as well. This won't be the only team that gets turned over by Everton this season, and I think they'll stay up easily as well.
It kind of reminds me of Tony Pulis at Stoke, in the sense that he just knows how to utilize his strengths, and whether that be fancy football or long ball football, whatever, he knows how to utilize his strengths. He gets the players doing it well, and it works.
He is a lot more nuanced than Pulis, but I get what you mean, like getting the best out of each and every player. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like John Walters should be a really good Premier League player, but he was very good. Right.
Except for that game, he scored 2 own goals.
Yeah.
Apart from that one.
That's not tactics, bro. That's just...
Didn't he miss a penalty?
That's what it was. He just missed it.
Yeah.
Well, the other clash in the title race between two Big Six teams... between a Big Six team, a Big Five team, and Tottenham was City versus Spurs. The shock upset, I saw it coming from a mile away. Just happened. We're fresh off of it. Dillette, as an Arsenal fan, you feel let off the hook?
I just want to know... How many times are they going to beat you guys before you stop calling it an upset?
Bro, that's what I was saying. That's what I've been saying this. We always lose to Tottenham. I don't know why. We just always lose to Tottenham.
Yeah, you've never even scored in their new stadium.
Yeah.
In 5 games.
I know. I don't know what it is.
Against 10-man Tottenham as well.
Okay, that was for like 10 minutes.
No, it's 10-man all game. Loris was in goal.
That is true, yeah.
He didn't have a terrible game. I mean, he did clap Rodri in the face, but...
Oh, I was so worried then. I was like, Lloris, if you've gone and done this just at the last minute, I'd be so angry. Luckily, I don't think it was a penalty, but it was one of those that you could see them give.
Yeah, definitely. Eric, what are your thoughts on Rico Lewis kind of slotting in towards the midfield there?
He looks sharp. He looks very sharp. I thought that he played pretty well. It was not his fault. I think Rodri was... lacking a lot. That was one of the worst games I've ever seen him. And that goal they conceded was very similar to the one they conceded against Tottenham 2 weeks ago. They're just trying to play it out from the back. They get caught. It's just like the Kulusevski one.
Yeah. No. I think it just kind of... He's not a midfielder. So, like, there was a lot of standing around, not really moving into the open space. But I think it could have helped to push him out wide towards that, I guess, left-back role. Because it just felt like too... claustrophobic in the midfield almost, but that's my take.
I think it just cut out for me there, so I spoke over you. My apologies, but anyway, I don't think I don't understand what Pep's trying to do. He seems to have absolute control, but I don't understand why he thinks just packing the midfield with as many bodies as possible is the way to do that. Because at times, I think Grealish had a really good game, but he was always coming inside, and then I was looking up at what are his options, and it was just a bunch of bodies. Like, there was no one really free and open. And I think they really desperately need... The one thing with Arsenal is we've always got an outlet. There's always Martinelli wide and Saka wide, and that allows us to, you know, control the game when we get into certain positions, so long as we're not being pressed into oblivion by Everton. And when City were at their best, you know, you had Sterling who might do that. Who, yes, in other situations, you can criticise Sterling. Or in previous years, you had a Sane and different players like that, you know. Whereas now, it seems like Pep's moving away from that. And it's something I've been worried about with Pep as well, because he's spoken about this in interviews for years. And I think he's just really moving towards what he thinks is this master plan. And I don't know. I can't see how it is. I just don't understand what he thinks is going to work with it.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, James, what's your take? I guess you're kind of the neutral here.
Well, City dominated the ball. Shock. Who'd have seen that one coming? But, like, really, what did they create in the game? There was that Mahrez chance before halftime that hit the bar. That, I mean, is it a chance? It would be a brilliant finish. Like, but, like, I thought Spurs' box defending...
It's a half chance that he does well with, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought Spurs' box defending was really highly disciplined. We'll get on to Romero in a second. Don't worry about that. But I thought everyone played their roles really well, especially Sky Sports Man of the Match, Pierre Højbjerg. I just want to talk about the goal quickly. I mean, he broke up the play well, got the assist for the goal, and yeah, the pass to Kane in isolation is very simple, but he wins the ball back from a very loose Rodri pass, and it's that pressing on Rico Lewis, holds off the City defender, then gives it to Tottenham's all-time top scorer, and that's the goal that wins the game. And you've got to give credit to Højbjerg for that. But Romero, we said this in the group chat, I just do not understand. Yeah. It's that first yellow card. It's inside Man City's own half, and he just clatters Haaland. Whether it's one of those, it's like, oh, let him know he's there or whatever. But it's,
that could have been a red, honestly.
We saw it in the 87th minute. All of a sudden, you make a challenge that you actually have to make, or a foul you have to make, and it potentially comes back to bite you. And it very nearly did.
I think what's been lacking from a City perspective, though, like, I like what you said about the attack. Like, it's just so stagnant. Haaland's making these beautiful runs in behind. You don't play him in. Fine. I understand that. You don't want to be, like, wasteful with the ball. You want to withhold possession the entire game. But at least play, like, a creative midfielder. Like, Julian Alvarez is not a creative midfielder. I don't know what the point of him the entire game was, to be honest, because he was playing, like, a second striker. But he's not technical enough to do anything with the ball. Like, the guy's a dog. You have to play him up top and just let him, like, run around and hunt and have fun.
Yeah.
So, I just didn't understand that.
Yeah, you said in the group chat, Rohan, that Grealish would be cooking in this game. Foden would be cooking in this game.
Oh, yeah, it was perfect for him.
Yeah, and it comes back to like a theory I've had for a while. And this was a great example. If whatever the reason for dropping De Bruyne was, there was a space open there in midfield where you could have moved Bernardo to the right side, which is what they did. And I think he did well for like the first 30 minutes and he went quiet.
I liked him better in the middle. He made like four or five driving runs forward that like made the defense collapse, but he just had no one to play to.
Over to the right side of the central midfield as well.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Into that De Bruyne role. Whereas then you could have had Grealish in that left eight and then Foden on the left side. That's something which I think will work so well, because when I watch Grealish for City, he's doing the job of an eight kind of in the left wing position. And I'm like, if you just have him there and then give him an option on the left, someone like a Foden, where Grealish can dribble past someone, make the space, and then Foden's there free, or Foden's there 1v1 with the defender where he's fantastic. That's exactly what you want. And I don't know, I loved Grealish's performance, but the entire game I was just like, just give him an outlet. Just give him someone he can like give the ball to. And obviously Haaland's there, but he's surrounded by like three defenders, so you know,
it definitely felt like a more free Jack Grealish, if you know what I mean, like a more Aston Villa Jack Grealish. He wasn't so stagnant on the ball, it wasn't pass.
Yeah, he was allowed to like run at Emerson Royale.
Yeah, I mean,
who was fantastic,
by
the way, Emerson Royale.
I could run at Emerson Royale most games, so
not that game. He was on something that
to be
game.
Fair, yeah. I said most games.
Okay, let's move to United. Casemiro sent off for choking a player, which is not that crazy. That's actually the first time Casemiro has ever been sent off with a straight red, I believe.
Yeah, because he used to get away with murder
in
Real
top
Madrid.
Five leagues.
He just did, not at Porto. That's probably where he got it, why they had to say top five leagues.
Yeah.
Some of the challenges he made in Real Madrid, how he never got a red card, it's just crazy. He used to get away with it all the time. So
Yeah, the best do, though, don't they? Like Rodri and Fabinho when he was at his best as well. I mean, Fabinho, even now, the other week against Brighton.
Oh, that was disgusting.
Yeah. Somehow the best defensive midfielders. Fernandinho, I don't know how he, like, has a career, because every game it felt like, but you know, he's just a master at making yellow card challenges and not getting booked for them. But on the red card for Casemiro, I don't really see. The thing that annoyed me about it was at the end of the Arsenal Everton game, and this wouldn't have made a difference to the result, Neil Mopé, so this isn't me being salty. I actually quite like him. I just respect the absolute, you know,
he likes the dog in
nuisance that he is. Yeah, and he was brought on at 1-0. Everton went 1-0 up. Immediately Dyche went to the bench and was like, I'm bringing on Neil Mopé because he's going to wind them up. He had no intention of Mopé scoring. It was purely there for, tactical reasons. And I had to respect that. But at the end, Neil Mopé like goes like that to Zinchenko, which is like up here. It's kind of like there, like bottom of the face. Still the face. Absolute stonewall red card. And the ref ends up booking both of them because Zinchenko, you know, told him off. Or whatever. I don't know how that. So, but the fact that wasn't a red card, and then Casemiro's was, which was, you know, they 2 seconds after he did that, they were laughing together. I don't understand. Yeah,
that's what Ten Hag said. I was just going to say, that's what Ten Hag said after the game, you know, that the refs need a little bit of consistency, and it would be nice to see a little bit of consistency once in a while.
Yeah. I'd like to comment.
It's pretty consistent. The guy who didn't send off Mopé, he was the guy who didn't send off Fabinho, so it's pretty consistent.
Oh, was he? There we are, then. Yeah, I'd just like to comment on, like, the...
consistently bad.
Yeah, I'd like to comment on, like, the people saying, oh, they hugged after. If I two-foot you, and I hug you after, it's still a red card. Like, it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, but...
And, like, at the time, it wasn't actually playful. You can see, like, the rage in Casemiro's face. It wasn't like, hey, there you go, mate.
I don't know. I think he's just holding him, and it looks worse than it is. I don't think there's any malice in that.
Casemiro is a... He's an instigator.
Oh, no, he is, but in that situation...
The still image of James has clearly got an agenda here, though.
Yeah, see, when I saw the image, I thought he was, like, throttling him or something.
When you actually see the clip, he's just holding him back. Like, yeah, it's nothing.
It's whatever.
But he has had it coming. James is right, but I just don't think it was the right decision on this occasion.
Yeah, well, Marcus Rashford gets another goal. He is absolutely cooking out here. The streets are his. He's back to his old self, cooking under Ten Hag. Yeah, all the celebrations, which is Ruben Neves's OG celebration, by the way.
Arsene Wenger.
Oh, yeah, I guess. Yeah, Wenger too.
Do you not remember when Arsene Wenger always used to do this after random goals?
Yeah.
As if it was all him, which it all was, obviously.
He was running economics in his head.
Yeah.
He was supply demand derivatives. Bukayo Saka's about to be a City player in the summer.
No.
So.
Right. Harry Kane, after what he did today.
It's definitely not Rashford. He scored twice against us. Killed our title hopes in the Leicester season.
I do want to talk about Rashford's goal, though, because it actually is really well worked. I thought Casemiro, he played a really pivotal role in it. He was just on the edge of the 18-yard box, and he's just that extra option that you can play the ball directly into. And he's got the ability on the ball that can, like, kind of do whatever he wants with it, and he lays it off to Garnacho, and it creates, like, a different phase of play. It's almost like putting out wide without just a direct pass. And I think Luke Shaw had made the cross, and it was just pinpoint. And it wasn't a special finish, but it's all you need. It was close range. He was never going to miss unless he hit straight at him. So
he's really good at, like, opening his body up and letting it shoot on his right foot. He seems to score a lot of goals like that, where he doesn't take it on the left. He just completely opens it up and finishes like that. He scored one against City like that a few weeks ago. I can think of, like, other ones in my head.
Yeah, no. It's the kind of goal which really shows the difference that Ten Hag's made over these few months, I think. You go back last season, there's no way United are scoring that goal. Obviously, Garnacho wasn't really in the team, and then Casemiro wasn't there and all that. But even if you, like, I mean, that's obviously going to help when you've got better players and when Rashford's in form and not being played through injury and all that, of course. But even then, it just, you see United score nice goals like these all the time, and it's just like... It's just what they are now. Ten Hag's really getting them going. And next season, I don't think they were in, like, an outside shout in the title race. Don't think they're in that anymore. But if they can get top four, I think they can really push with a good summer. There's a lot of reason to be excited, I think, for them.
Yeah, I do want to mention, I shouted out Marcus Rashford as one of the players to watch this season because of Ten Hag, but that's just me.
I put him in my FPL draft. Right.
Yeah, well, broken clock.
Yeah, broken clock and all that.
Yeah.
That is true. You didn't say it.
Rory Jennings said that Haaland wouldn't get more than 15 goals. Actually, I think he said Haaland won't score 15 goals. And then on a more recent thing, he's like, I was right. He scored way more.
That's fair.
8D chat.
Another good shout, you know.
He's not wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
Mystic Rory.
All right, let's move into a stat line that made my heart happy. Wolves-Liverpool 3-0. Not to Liverpool, to Wolves. James. Klopp. I'm telling you, Klopp out, man. I'm telling you, Klopp out. You don't
get
feel
James's mum back in.
The game was just bad. The thing is, like, Liverpool just won't get rid of Klopp because they know for a fact that there is potentially no one else who can kind of work on the budget that he has and push for that top echelon. But, like, I just want to talk about the goals, really. Like,
Sam Allardyce.
Oh, yeah, sorry. My bad. I just want to talk about the goals, though. Like, the first one, it's just so baited. Like, Gomez is running back into his position. It's a ball over the top from Matinho. And Huang timed his run really well. And it's a little bit unlucky. Of course it is. It hits Matip. It goes in. But irrelevant, because the ball's going to fall to two Wolves players who are open inside the box. Like, they're going to score anyway if it doesn't come off Matip. And the second goal, you've got to credit the finish from Dawson. For a centre-back, unreal. But, like, the free kick... Yeah,
what a finish.
The great finish was amazing. But, like, the free kick that put the ball into the box was terrible. It wasn't intentional at all. And Cunha, I think it is, takes a... I can't tell if it's a good touch or a bad touch. It's one of those. But what it does is... It's right on the touchline, but it's not 18 yards out, it's not 6 yards out, it's kind of in that middle area of like 12 yards out, and the defender just doesn't know whether he should press forward and leave a gap or just hold back and hope the defence clears it. They hold back, bit of pinball, and then you have that outrageous finish, to be fair to him. It's a little bit of bad luck in that sense, but I mean the Wolves deserved it, like, let's be real here. And the third goal. Great counter-attack led by Adama. I do have to give Thiago some stick here. Crazy. I never do this. But Adama's counter-attacking. Behind Thiago is Ruben Neves. Thiago looks. He sees Neves. And he just waits an extra, like, second and a half before he actually starts, like, sprinting to cover the pass. And by then, it's too late. But I do have to be honest. Liverpool actually did create 3 or 4 chances this game. And Klopp got a lot of stick for that, for just saying that. That was it. And I feel a bit bad for him in that, because there are chances from, like, Nunes. I think Salah had a half-decent chance. Naby Keita had one off the line. There were chances this game for Liverpool. Do we deserve to win? Absolutely not. But I do think the stick Klopp got from that game, for what he said, was a little bit harsh.
That's fair. Eric, how do you feel about Cody Akpo? Is he 007 yet? He
might be. No, he's 006.
006. Okay, he's on his way.
They're just playing Everton next week, who are in terrific form as of late, so it's going to be 007. We know that. But no, that was pretty shambolic. The game was just over after a couple of minutes. You wouldn't see this from Liverpool back in the day. Obviously, no Van Dijk is going to be a little bit of a struggle, because he used to play every single minute. But no, it was terrible. Thiago was jogging back, not marking Neves. They just let him walk it in the net. Very poor. Also, credit to Wolves. I thought some of their players were really good. Dawson, I thought, was nice.
Oh, he's a Wolf.
Mateus Nunez looks a solid player. Liverpool should have got him in the summer.
Yeah.
That would be logical, though, Eric.
My thing...
It's true. That'd my be thing a is, midfielder I, in his prime.
I don't think I've seen Cody Akpo put a shot on target yet.
No. But I will
pretty
say...
Pretty sure in his first game he had one that went straight down the middle, actually, so...
Oh, okay. He's put one shot on target in 6
sit
games.
Sit down, Rohan. Sit down.
Yeah. Rohan. Wrong Rohan. Once again.
Wrong Rohan.
What? Christ. Wrong hand.
I like that. That might be my new Instagram and TikTok name now.
Nice. Well, just every time Rohan, like, gets a prediction wrong, we're just like...
Wrong hand.
It's for 40 minutes, just go wrong hand.
I'm not mad at it. But yeah, no, Liverpool, I mean, absolutely treacherous this season. But they're doing worse than Chelsea, who drew to Fulham after a January window where they spent like $230 million. Dilette, what were your thoughts on that game? We talked about it a little bit on yesterday's episode, but...
In the mudrick. He is in the mudrick. That's what I meant to say.
The Chernobyl Pepe.
Ablaze with slander.
Don't disrespect Pepe like that.
Yeah. Pepe's won an FA Cup. Crucial in an FA Cup.
Nah, what is this obsession with Pepe from you guys? You guys always just
Pepe
come
overhated
back
him.
Assist. Pepe. This kid
empty
is ass.
Stadium
assist
Pepe.
In the final.
Empty Stadium
final.
Pepe was a different breed.
Pepe he without the crowd. Pepe, no, he's world class. Pepe without a crowd Pepe. Or at Southampton where there basically is no crowd.
Carey is so crazy. Carey is so crazy.
Well, Maitland-Niles was crucial as well, but David
Luiz. Danny Ceballos too.
Yeah.
He is ass.
Yeah, you could be right, and I definitely think coming to Arsenal would have been the smarter choice because, like you said, he kind of gets bedded into the league in a more... natural way rather than just being thrown in. And also, I just think that, like, the way Arteta works with young players, especially young wingers, his track record with them, even when you go back to City, the amount of Jesus, Sterling, Sané, all credit Arteta above anyone else in terms of the one-on-one training that they did with him. And now, you know, you see him doing it with Nketiah. Saka obviously was, I think, going to be great anyway, but I think he's really helped. And then Martinelli's come on leaps and bounds. I remember a while ago when he would play on the wing and it was really poor, and I was like, just put this guy up front because, you know, he can finish, he can do that, but, like, it wasn't working. But then, like, a couple of months later, it didn't take long for me to be proven wrong, basically. So, yeah, and it's not that, you know, Potter's not capable of doing that, or he will. I do think it will come for him at Chelsea, and I think, like, all the, you know, people talking about all the spending Chelsea are doing, like, people are questioning Enzo Fernandez's transfer fee. I think ultimately you get a couple of years down the line and it won't really be being questioned, because you'll be seeing a player who's world class, at least borderline world class by that point. And you'll realise, oh, he's got another 8 or 9 years. Like, this is what you spend the money for. So I think the money, it will come good for Chelsea. The worry I have for them is whether Potter is the guy to do it, and how much of this time Chelsea are going to give to Potter. Because it's not that I don't think he can do it. It's just that he's been there a while now, and I'm only now starting to see the first signs of something, because up until a couple of weeks ago, I didn't see anything. But he has got the defense working well together, and that's the first thing that Eddie Howe addressed. It's the first thing that Arteta addressed, and Ten Hag as well. It's the first thing that all three of those guys got down and sorted out before you could then, you know, get Rashford playing his best, or get Saka to play his best, or get Almiron to play his best if we're talking about Eddie Howe. So with a Mudrick, it might take a bit more time, but I do think, you know, we'll just have to give it time, basically, is my point. But I'm not 100% sold on Potter, but I have seen the first signs, so we'll see, I guess.
Eric, what are you predicting for Enzo Fernandez here? Are you going to come out and say flop? No.
He will come good.
Okay,
he's there for the next 8.5 years, so I think he's going to come good. They were not creating at all in that game. I was watching Conor Gallagher. I don't think he really put a foot wrong, but he doesn't have that final ball in him. And Mount, who is expected to be the creative one, there were a couple of opportunities where he could have, like, swung the ball wide and it was just getting intercepted. Oh. It was very painful to watch. There's even one where Mudrick made a run that he completely didn't notice.
Love seeing
him
struggle.
If you put someone next to Enzo, you've got to get, I think, someone else to sort of has the final ball in them, like Jorginho does. Cause he used to create a lot from deep. Thiago Silva did create a chance for Havertz, which he missed. They also need someone up top who can finish the chances. Havertz had it on a plate.
Yeah, that's one thing. I did like the look of... I only watched the extended highlights, but I did like the look of that Fofana lad up front. I think there was just a couple of moments. He didn't do anything. He did have a chance where he went close. I can't remember exactly what happened. But there were a couple of moments that I saw where I was like, there's something there with you. It's raw and undefined at the moment, but those are the kind of signings that I think we could look back at as, like, really good from Chelsea. He was, like, what, 8 million, and then they got that Andre Santos guy as well, and Chukwuemeka. I think these are players who can grow into something as well. But, yeah, Fofana, because, like, Havertz isn't... I'd like to see Fofana given more chances because no one else seems to be hitting. Obviously, Felix is going to be back soon, so, you know, he'll probably get the chances, but...
For sure, that was another chance that was from long ball from a defender.
Yeah,
when he, like, rounded the keeper.
It reminded me of Drogba, and that's not just because he's Ivorian. But, like, they're just in that split second, I was like, but then he didn't have to finish.
My thing with Enzo is he's going to come in with so much, like, pressure on him, and I would say out of the 10 most expensive Premier League signings, I think two or three are. It's too early to tell really if they're flops or not. But aside from Van Dijk, the rest of that list. No. I said end of the season.
Grealish is coming good.
He played well today.
He was really good today. City's best player. He just needs to play as the eight with a winger. He's the De Bruyne replacement.
Nah, I'm not including Grealish yet. End of the season. But aside from Van Dijk, rest of them have been flops. So Enzo has, like, the odds are not in his favor right now. But I hope he turns it around because I hope he can perform because he such a good player. It's just I think 130 is a little bit too early for.
I'll tell you what's wild is dropping that money on him and then just putting him at loan six, which he can do well, but it's just not his main position. Like if you had Jorginho there next to him, I think he could have affected the game more. And I think he could have helped Jorginho out a lot. That's why, like, I get why they sold him because, like, long term, it's probably the right move. But, like, short term, I think if they keep Jorginho, there's a chance they get Champions League because I think then that midfield starts to sort itself out a little bit more because you've brought in Enzo, you've got Jorginho, who's still, a good player. And then you can have your Mount or your Gallagher, who's kind of, you know, maybe they'll turn up. They might.
Nah, Gallagher's got to go for me. Like he works hard, but that's it. Like
he is such an Everton player, isn't he?
Yeah, Mason Mount is the best midfielder in the league, according to Dillette.
According to Dillette.
That sounds like first.
Would you say you take the 20 mil?
Partey first. No. You're not rescinding. Recant.
Okay, I'll write it.
Oh,
and then he leaves.
Dillette's gone.
God punished him for that ungodly opinion.
Yeah. Either that or he got so angry that he just had to leave.
Yeah, well, I mean, he kind of set the precedent for what I'm about to say, but thank you guys for joining us for such a great episode. All right, he's back now.
No, it's crazy. My internet just cut out because I was praising Mason Mount, bro. What's going on?
It's a sign.
Yeah, but carry on.
I was just wrapping up. Thank you guys for joining us, and we'll see you guys next time.
Bye-bye.